Good evening. My name is Dawn. I'm a compulsive overeater and your moderator for this session. The topic of this workshop is Everlasting Hope, Long-Timers. I would like to introduce the speakers for this workshop. Dorothy W., Jana O., and Sandy S. Let's start the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Each speaker will present for 20 minutes, and I would like to introduce Dorothy W.
Hello, everyone. My name is Dorothy, and I am from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I have been in OA for 39 years and am really pleased to have been asked to speak on this topic. One of the reasons I'm so pleased to talk about it is because my life has been dramatically changed over the 39 years I've been in program. And so it wasn't just coming into program that changed my life, but it's been the ongoing work in the program that continues to change my life. When I first came into OA, I came in to lose weight and to gain some kind of control over my eating. And within, I got abstinent like really quickly in program, gave up one of my major binge foods and everything, and took off the weight. And over the 39 years, I have maintained anywhere from a 90 to 100 pound weight loss, somewhere in there. And my food, even though I'm not going to claim perfect abstinence the whole time, it never got back to what it was prior to program. So like I said, I came in for that. I wanted weight loss. I wanted control over my food. But I didn't understand that my life could be better. I mean, I kind of had an indication of it at my first meeting that there was something more to the program than just the food. But what that was, I wasn't real clear, except the people in the rooms were happier than I was. And if they told me what it felt like, I could not identify with, because my feelings were really wrapped up in fear. It was wrapped up in self-absorption, self-pity, like all those type of things. And so coming in, I had to try to believe that things could be different. And people kept saying, oh, that they would tell what was going on in their life and that they weren't eating over it. And that really impressed me. The other thing was they were talking about like things they could do currently that they weren't able to do before. And that was really appealing to me. I wanted what they had. And so I started working the steps almost immediately. And then there was a little bit of time trying to find a sponsor. And I'm not going to tell you how many sponsors I went through in the first few months, but there were a lot. And finally found the sponsor that I was able to work with. And it was a very good fit, learned an awful lot, and was able to start working the steps. And what I found out over the years that, you know, I worked the steps, and I don't really remember how long it took me to get through the 12 of them, but I think within the first year, I have been almost through all of the steps. And a part of me understood the steps was that when you get through, then like there's some kind of arrival point that you have arrived, and that there would be maintenance, because I heard that step 10, 11, and 12 were maintenance steps. And so I thought, oh, okay, you know, you hit this point and you will maintain. But there were these tapes, Joe and Charlie tapes, and you know, they would talk about the big book tapes. And I can remember them saying that anyone who's truly working steps 10, 11, and 12 will not be maintaining. They will have to be growing. And I'm going, okay, that's fine, growing. No, not quite sure what that meant. But there were some other things people said that were kind of giving me a clue. One of them was my sponsor told me that the person I was would eat again, and therefore I had better change. So for me, I thought, okay, you work the steps, I'll change. All right, then I'll be okay. But I didn't understand change, that change is constant. So the person I was back 39 years ago, if I'm still that person today, I would be eating again. I can't afford to say, oh, I changed and I'm done. Change is constant, and I have to be willing to change when needed, or when, I hate to say forced to, but you know, when things have to change, I have to accept it and be willing to do the change that I need to do. There was another thing someone said that really struck me. And this woman was at a convention, and she was saying how that she knew that she was not in recovery, that she was, you know, she was struggling with her recovery. And she said the one way she knew it was that she looked back over that previous year, and there had been no difference in her life. And she said that if she's working the program, that there should be a difference. So after that, that really struck me. And I realized that if I cannot look back over the last 12 months and see something different, some kind of growth, then I'm not working my program, because it is impossible for me to work my program and not see some kind of change. And so every once in a while, I'll stop and think, okay, this is November. What happened since last November? Is there any difference in some area of my life? So I'm always looking to see that there's some kind of change going on, because that's, to me, important. And the third thing that somebody said that was extremely important to me is that sometimes you have to give up something good to get something better. And so that to me also means about change, that I can think, oh, I have the good right now, and then I'm being pushed to move and to give that up. And whenever I'm thinking, wait, I like what I have. Why am I being forced to change at this point? And I remember what the woman said, that change, you let go of it. My higher power wants me to change, because there's something better out there for me. And that's how I look at that. And so over the 39 years, I'm looking at my life changing and unfolding. And for me, I want a better life, and I've wanted a better life. And that's why I'm still here 39 years, because I know that life is going to get better, even though I think it's really good right now, that there is even better out there for me. And I need to keep coming back to get it. And the other thing I also know is that life is going to also have a lot of difficulties in it. And that if I'm going to get through it with my sanity, with my abstinence, with my health, with some kind of acuity, I need to use the steps in my life on a regular basis. And so for me, I don't work the steps. I try to live the steps. The steps are my guide to how life should be. And I didn't have that growing up. It was like, kind of like nobody really understood, like, if this is happening, then maybe you should do this. And this is how you can approach it. And it was just kind of willy-nilly in a way. But with the 12 steps and the program, I've been given a guide to life. One thing I wanted to do as part of this talk is to look at what are some of the changes over the past year. But I also want to look at the promises of the program, because again, it says in the promises, you know, if you've been, I'm going to have to do some reading so I don't mess up. But if you have been painstaking about this phase of your development, if we have been painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. And so to me, it meant, and the way I always heard it interpreted, like that means once you work the first 9 steps, I'm halfway through. Well, no, not for me, not the way I like to interpret it. It just means that I'm going to be amazed. And what's halfway? I don't know, when I'm halfway through my life, because I'm always going to be changing and whatever else. But I am amazed. If I could not have explained to myself 39 years ago what I would feel like today, I mean, it was just not in my I could not have comprehended that in any way, shape, or form, that I could be so different than I was when I came in, and that things would change and continue to change and get better and better. So one of the things it said, the first promise is that we are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. Well, when I came in, for like I said, I just wanted free of the weight, free of the food. And I didn't know beyond that what freedom is, that I would know a new freedom and a new happiness. And for me, that new freedom is freedom. That I think the one that's most significant as far as a freedom is freedom from the Dorothy who lived in fear, who was afraid of people, who was isolated, who was felt really inept about living life, and freedom from, well, at one point I felt very suicidal and afraid that what would happen in life that would put me over and that I would never be able to handle. And today, over the years, things have happened that I thought, oh, I'll never get through it. And because of program, the steps, the people in the program, a higher power, I've been able to get through some tough times. And so today I look at things and think, oh my gosh, and I'm thinking I have a history, 39 years of seeing that I can get through things. A few months ago, I don't know how long ago, back in the summer, my sister was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer and liver cancer. And she is the last person in my immediate family. And I am really close to my sister. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, if something happens to her, I don't want to go on living, you know, that kind of thought and everything. And that was just like a feeling, but not like I wasn't planning to do anything about that. But I thought, you know, Dorothy, you've been through this. You've been through deaths before, and it will be, and if she dies before me, I could be dead tomorrow before her. But if she was to die before me, then I'm going to get through it. I will have a lot of pain. I will cry. I will do appropriate things. I will grieve appropriately, and I will get through it. I will come out at the other end, and I will be able to be happy, joyous, and free. And I believe in happy, joyous, and free. I don't believe that something is going to happen and that I will never again, you know, feel good. And before program, I didn't understand that no matter how bad things are, I can't get through it. And that to me is a freedom. It's like a burden lifted off of me that makes me not as fearful. And as far as happiness, I remember my sister saying to me, she would ask me, Dorothy, are you happy? Dorothy, are you happy? And I never knew. And I couldn't answer because I didn't know what happiness was. All I knew was I was trying to get through life and, you know, my stomach tied up in knots, feeling anxious and everything else. And today I can say I am happy. And happiness isn't like a woo-woo all the time running and jumping up. It's just like a deep sense of a contentment. A contentment with myself and where I am in life. And I think that becomes deeper the more I've been around program. Before it had to be an incident would happen, like a special event. And then I say, I'm happy. But now I think there's just like a low-grade feeling of contentment and that I associate with happiness. It says, we're not going to regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. when I first came in, I would tell my story. Oh, was it a pity party? Do you know how people tease me over my weight? Do you know this? Do you know that? And now I realize, and I don't wish it on anyone, but I do realize I would never have come into these rooms. I never would have stayed in these rooms if all of that past had not happened. I needed those times, those situations to make me want to be different, to make me say, is there a different way I can be in this world? And so when I look back, I don't regret the past. I don't regret what happened to me growing up, because I feel so much better about myself now. And I think I can also look back and see that there were some really, really good times. It wasn't just being teased every day or something like that. And so I just look at the past differently. I look at the relationship I have with my mother differently. Like, all kind of things have been changed as far as my perception about the past. The one that really is important to me, the promise, we will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. And the word serenity, someone told me that when I first came into program, it would have been like, what is serenity? I just had no clue what that was. And I know that I would read that pamphlet Just for Today, and they would talk about that having a quiet half hour, and I would take that half hour, read my OA literature and contemplate it and everything else. And when I began actually doing a step 11, you know, the meditation part of it, I began to get a sense of what it meant to have peace. And for me, peace is, it's like watching something happen and then just not getting involved in it at a gut level. And I can remember the first time that happened, there was an incident happening at work, and right now I can't even remember what it was, but I knew it was going to be, there was going to be a lot of chaos at work, and I was going to have to somehow participate at some level. And so I went to work that day, and the chaos happened just the way I thought it would. But that morning before I went to work, I had my quiet time, and I read this thing, and it was about let go and let God. And that became like my mantra of the day, let go, let to God. So at the end of the day, everything I thought was going to happen happened. However, I was peaceful. I mean, I didn't get involved in it emotionally. My gut did not get involved in it. And that to me is when I know I am serene, is that I can take deep breaths. My mind isn't focused on whatever happened and they said this, she did that, you know, that kind of thing. I'm just taking a deep breath. I can be an observer. I don't have to be a participant in everything. And that's when I know that I have serenity. And I look for it more and more. More and more, I look for it. And I think over the years, I am better. I have more tools in my toolbox as far as how to get to that state of serenity. When I first came in, all I had was the OA literature. I would read it and whatever. But over the years, I started looking at, well, this can make me serene. Like today, I was really anxious about a lot of different things. And I felt like overwhelmed. A lot of things needed to be done. But I haven't had a walk for 2 days. I said, Dorothy, go for a walk, because you know you'll feel better. And sure enough, I got out in the fresh air, fresh, crisp air, and I felt so much better. I could put everything in perspective. It says, no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. I was ashamed when I came in as far as some of the things I felt, more about how I felt, a few things about how I did things. So for me, it was like, oh, I can't believe I treated that person that way. I thought I was a better person than that. And there was some shame with it and everything. But what I've learned in program, no matter what I've done, the more I share with someone, someone seems to get benefit from it. There's nothing I can say that somebody doesn't need to hear. And so what has happened for me, that has made me way more open, and knowing that I'm not alone, that not only are there people in program, but also people out of program I can share with today. And I'm not going to do a lead out in the public like I would in program, but I can kind of discern that maybe this person needs to hear I've been through something similar. And so I'm not afraid to share who I am like I was before program. Before program, it was all about, I kept my mouth shut, really. I didn't say that much to people because I didn't want them to see any part of me. But now I'm very much open and able to do that. There are way more, I can't get through all the promises. All I have to say, and I just want to close with this, is that life gets better. And I didn't stay around 39 years just to maintain and have what I had when I came in. I'm here because life is better and I am enjoying my life. I am enjoying me. I am enjoying this experience. And I thank you for allowing me to share.
Thank you, Dorothy. Next, I'd like to introduce Jana O.
I'm Jana. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm very grateful to be here. I would say being here and talking right now is something beyond my wildest dreams. I certainly would never have thought this was something that I was going to be doing. And that's part of what has happened to me in this program, that I have been taken to places that I didn't expect to ever get to. Next week, it's going to be 33 and a half years since I came in. When I was growing up, my mother and my doctor were always worried that I weighed too much. I think I attained my adult height quicker and I weighed more than they expected me to. And I was a chubby kid. And so weight was an issue in our house. And I'm not blaming my mother. I am a compulsive overeater. There is no doubt about that. But I had this whole weight issue pretty early on. I think I went on my first diet when I was 11, and I ultimately got married and had a child and developed gestational diabetes. And by the time I was done, I did have a successful pregnancy and a healthy son, but I had read about someone's recovery from alcoholism. And I had known a couple of people in this program. When they had told me about the program, I thought, no way, this, I can't imagine doing that. But when I read this, at the point when the doctor had said, if you don't lose weight, you're going to become diabetic for real. And I thought, how am I going to do that? I've never been able to successfully diet and keep it off. I didn't know what to do. And that led me to identify and realize that what I was hearing in this book, when someone talked about alcohol, was how I felt about food. And I knew enough about the program. I thought, oh, that means I need to go to OA. And I am a compulsive person. I found out that there was a meeting the next morning. I bundled up my 6-week-old infant and drove a half hour to get to the meeting. And I haven't stopped coming back. And I am so grateful for that. It's at this point, I'm maintaining a more than 60-pound weight loss. I was not somebody who came in and overnight got abstinent. I was not willing to do very much in this program. I was willing to go to meetings. I was willing to read literature. And that was about it. And that may have contributed to the fact that, and I did work with a sponsor. I had several sponsors, and it somehow didn't really click. And I remember going to a meeting and hearing someone say it took them 7 years to get abstinent. And that gave me hope, because I wasn't at 7 years yet at that point. And I thought, okay, maybe there's hope for me. And I went to a marathon and I heard someone sharing her story. She had lost over 100 pounds, and she weighed and measured her food and called it in every day. And I had tried various things. I had not tried that. Basically, I would say now, I had not really put the food down. And so I called her to find out if that was what she was still doing. It was. I was a little disappointed, but I asked her if she would sponsor me, and she said yes. And she still is my sponsor. And I put the food down and ate 3 meals a day. I would call her in the morning and explain what it was I was going to eat. I didn't weigh and measure everything, but I weighed and measured the things that seemed most important to me. the things I was most likely to overeat on. And that was a great support. I've often said, I didn't do it because it was virtuous, but I did it because it worked for me and it was what I needed to do. And I remember early on, and I think I was withdrawing from food. I felt so tired. I thought, I probably have cancer. I wanted to put my head down on my desk at work. And that went away and I realized, you know, I was getting used to it and things were okay. And I started taking action. She recommended to me that I think about, were there things that I enjoyed doing that didn't involve food, didn't involve spending a lot of money, and that I should come up with some ideas about things that I could do instead of food. And at that point in my life, I turned to food for comfort. That was my kind of homing instinct. I was always going towards, when's my next meal? What could I be eating here? At one point, people used to call me and my husband because we had been to so many restaurants in the Seattle area. You know, if somebody wanted a restaurant recommendation, they called us. And I can tell you that did not lead to weight loss. And so I came up with a list of things. And I became willing to put the food down and have life in between meals. And it did help to be able to do that. I also got more honest. And so I would call her every morning and I would explain if I had eaten anything outside of what I had committed the previous day. And she would remind me that the point was not to beat myself up. And I said, no, but I've got to acknowledge it to myself and to you and to my higher power that I have done this and then I can let go of it and moved on. And so that worked. And I remember thinking, I'm not going to tell her about this. I'm going to, you know, and then it eventually got to the point I thought, oh, Jana, don't, you're fooling yourself. You know, you're going to talk about it. You need to talk about it. And, you know, I do this imperfectly and I have been nervous about being part of this panel. And what came to me from being in a meeting was that we do this stuff imperfectly. And so every time I got nervous, I thought, okay, I don't have to do this perfectly. I can just show up and be of service. And that's been a very important thing in my life. And I think really what happened to me was I got sick and tired of having to talk about the fact that no, I hadn't been completely abstinent or I had not followed my food plan, that I had eaten something outside of it. And or I had eaten a larger quantity. And I would talk about this in meetings. And eventually I became willing to put the food down and one day at a time eat what was on my food plan and stick to it. And I'm really, that has been so important. And I've gotten so much support from my sponsor. You know, there'll be times I'll call her up and she'll say, okay, lay it on me. You know, tell me what's going on. And something that we have done between us is that I would talk and then I would say, let me, you know, what's happening with you? And she would fill in what's happening with her. And I get as much from hearing how she is working her program and what's going on in her life as I do from talking about what's going on in my life. Both of those things have been really important to me. And I saw what my sponsor had and I trusted. I wanted what she had, and I did trust that if I did what she was doing, it would work for me too. And so when I think about the magic of the program, you know, I developed a relationship with a higher power. I grew up in a family that had a religion, but I somehow never felt that the God of my understanding was really doing anything with my food. And in the program, and listening to people in meetings talk about trusting their higher power with whatever was going on in their life, that has made a big deal to me. And in this program, one day at a time, abstinently, I have gone through the birth of my daughter, my second child. I've gone through the deaths of both of my parents and of my mother-in-law. I've changed jobs. I've now retired. I was in a really bad car accident and survived and was out of work for 6 months. And I've been able to do those things in the program with the support of the program. It really, and now I'm going through the pandemic. And I feel so sorry for people who don't have this kind of program because I have gotten so much support from being able to go to meetings and being in touch with people in the program and using the tools. So when I think about it, I don't add up my days of abstinence. What has worked for me is to focus on what am I doing today? What's going on in my program now? And really thinking about it one day at a time. And that was another thing that was really important to me in the beginning. You know, there are family items, family food items that I no longer eat. And I don't know whether I would be willing to say I'm never, ever again in my life going to eat them. But I can say just for today, I don't need to make those now. And I am not going to be eating those now. And that's true for other things as well. And another thing that I've learned in this program is that I have developed good habits that have served me in such great stead. There are things that I do every day. So I get up and I make a food plan. You know, what am I going to do today? And I write it out. I used to call my sponsor every morning. Now I email it to her. And I talk about what it was that I ate yesterday, you know, what was different. And sometimes it's, you know, we got takeout food instead of the food that I had planned, you know, that I was going to cook myself. So it may or may not be a cause for concern, but I'm able to be honest with myself and with my sponsor. And there are program activities that I do every day. Really, this is a daily program for me. It's a way of life. And that's another thing. I would have never thought that I was going to be doing this. As I say, I came into the program. I certainly didn't expect when I came in that I would be doing this 33 years later. And that would have overwhelmed me to even think about it. But I can think about, okay, what am I doing today? What's coming up? And another thing, that whole thing that if I don't plan for what's coming my way, I'm going to be in trouble. So if I know that I'm going to have a challenging meeting with somebody, or if I'm going out to dinner, or I'm going to somebody's house, or we're going someplace for a holiday meal, back when we could do that thing, that kind of thing, I need to have a plan. And holidays are oftentimes when the meals come at times that I don't usually eat. And so talking to my sponsor ahead of time, and she was so helpful, you know, in my social life, there are a lot of potlucks. And so potlucks have been a challenge over the years. And I have learned what it is I need to do. I need to pay attention and I need to realize ahead of time and pray about it and ask my higher power for guidance. And then I need to talk about it. And I have discovered that it is helpful to me. There have been times when I have bookended. So I have called somebody and said, you know, I'm going to be going to this friend's house for dinner. My plan is to have one moderate serving and not to have seconds. And my plan is if for some reason I choose that I start thinking I need seconds, I'm going to excuse myself. I'm going to go to the bathroom and I'm going to take out my phone and make a phone call. That isn't something that I've done every time, but when I have been willing to do it, that has been very helpful to me. I do this imperfectly. It's that very odd. I think of it as the knife edge. I am walking that, I am powerless over food, but that doesn't mean I don't have my share of things that I need to do. And among those things are praying, talking to my sponsor, reading OA literature, using the tools, making a plan. Action plan wasn't part of the tools when I came in, but I realized that's something that I've been doing and it has worked very well for me. And so that whole, when I came in, perfectionist, I didn't realize what a perfectionist I was. And so for me to be able to say, I do this imperfectly, yeah, I can't go too far in the, I pray not to go so far into imperfect that I am no longer abstinent. But on the other hand, I cannot expect perfection out of myself. There's someone who unfortunately died of another disease while a member of this program who said to me, Jana, you know, we weren't meant to be perfect. And I have often thought of what she said, and that's been important to me. One day at a time, taking it one day at a time, I've talked about that. And I have gradually learned how to use other tools. the phone was really hard for me. And I heard somebody in a meeting talking about making 90 phone calls in 90 days. I talked it over with my sponsor. We agreed that if I made the call, even if I didn't reach somebody, but I left them a voicemail, whether or not they called me back, that counted. And I did. I was able to make 90 calls in 90 days. And that helped get me past that burden of, oh, I'm going to bother them. Oh, maybe they aren't going to want to talk to me. Something strange is going to happen to me. I'll be anxious. It's not going to be good. And I've had so many wonderful calls with people where they've called me just when I needed a phone call, or they've told me I called them when they needed a phone call. And I've been able to talk with people. How's it working for you? How do you deal with such and such? That's been really helpful to me. I had so many resentments when I came in, and working the steps and turning my will and my life over to the care of a higher power and really going through and looking to see what it was I had been doing. I had not been leading an esteemable life. And now I've made amends to people. And when I look back, I had a sponsor who said, you know, you need to make amends if you want to avoid the person coming toward you on the sidewalk. And this was pre-pandemic. And I now have all sorts of people who I don't have those feelings towards anymore. And I have many fewer resentments. And I have a new way of life that I never expected. I caught myself, and this to me was a 10th step. There was somebody in another part of my life who had been recommended for a job that I had really thought for quite a while that she wouldn't be a good choice. But the people who were picking picked her. And I was about to call the person to complain, and actually started talking to her. And I realized, wait a minute, this may be an opportunity for this person. So I was given a new way to look at this that was much more generous than I would have ever thought of before. And I thought, that's absolutely my higher power working in my life. I would not have thought of that. I now weigh less than I did when I was in high school. That astounds me. I am able to pray when I'm hungry. I pray, higher power, please don't give me more hunger than I can handle. And I have had that prayer answered over and over again. Please don't give me more hunger, more craving than I can handle. And so for me, I really have this theory that every time I become willing to do something more in the program, whether it's a little bit more about in my 10th step, or it's using a different tool, or I don't know, something, it really feels like it's a way for my higher power to work with me, that I'm giving my higher power something to work with that is going to make a difference in my life. And it always turns out better than I expected. You know, if I think, okay, well, maybe I'll add this meeting. You know, it turns out that in this meeting, I hear something that I needed to hear that I'd been wondering about for a while. Or, you know, if I think, well, really, I haven't been doing a 10th step in a way that's very useful, I'll try a different way of doing it. I get something out of it that I hadn't expected. So I'm just so grateful for that. And I think that really at this point, I'm going to say, I've said what I need to say for the moment. And thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Jana. Next, I would like to introduce Sandy S.
Hi, everybody. I'm Sandy, recovered compulsive overeater. So nice to be here. Those were two great acts I've got to follow here. Those guys were great. Wow. Well, I'm just like you guys. I've had my issues with food. I was powerless over food. My life was unmanageable. I first found OA in 1975. I wanted to lose weight. I weighed then about what I weigh right now. And I jumped into OA. I dedicated myself to it. I went to meetings. I did service. I gung-ho. Everybody was on gray sheet at the time. I stayed for 3 years. I was on a stayed abstinent on gray sheet, weighed and measured food plan for 3 years and got really thin. Then I just had to have a piece of bread, and I hadn't had any bread for years. And I just was way back in the food again. And I left And I did eating like I had never done in my life. I ate everything I hadn't eaten for 3 years. I learned in a way that if you binge like that, you could purge. So I did some binging and purging for about 4 or 5 months. And then I quit purging and I went on with my life. In looking back, I realized at the time I wasn't working the steps. I was just surviving on this energy of the group and service and whatnot. Anyway, so I left for 30 years. I went out and I thought I had some control over my food and I was just going to diet now and lose the weight. And I did. I had the success and failure for 30 years. Before I came back to, OA in 2005, but 3 years before that, I thought, okay, Sandy, look, you're 55 years old or however old I was, get it together. You should be able to handle this. Get on the diet and lose the weight. Just pumping myself up. Like if I try harder, I'm going to be able to do this. So I tried really hard and I stayed off sugar and carbs for like 3 years. 3 years is my top. I guess 3 years. And then I was back in the food again. And this time it wasn't like all the other times. This time it was like, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to go on the diet on Monday. I'm not going to be able to start over. I was really in touch with my hopelessness, my helplessness. It didn't look good. I saw my life was going to be now totally wrapped up in how am I going to go get what I need to eat? What's it going to be? How much of it can I have and still be able to function? I just saw my life was just going to be filled with that. Well, I was lucky enough to get pointed back to OA. I never thought about going back to OA, but I got pointed back. It's a long story, but I found myself in a workshop where people were talking about being powerless over food, and they were OA members and Gratiate Anonymous members. And I was like, oh yeah, this is where I belong. These are my people. They're talking they feel the same way about food that I do. And it was the grace of God that got me in that room. I got down on my knees that next morning and I prayed to God for help. I was out of town. I went back to Seattle. I said, I'm going to find some meetings. I'm going to check out the meetings that OA has. And I'm going to find a meeting that I like. I'm going to do this thing. I found 4 meetings that I liked. I went to those meetings, 4 meetings every week. I'm looking for some guidance now from a higher power because I'm not sure where I'm going. And I didn't plan what I was going to say because I know that God has a better plan for me in all areas of my life. And that's something that I've learned through the years. I didn't learn that when I first came into OA. There was a lot of talk about higher power and have a relationship with a higher power. But you know, I wanted to quit overeating. I wanted to lose weight. Those were things that were important to me. And I went to those meetings and I heard people talking about meditating and their relationship with higher power. But what I did do was I put down the food. I went to meetings. I read the literature. I called people. I got a sponsor and I started working the steps. Because that's what they said, you got to do the steps. What I've learned is the steps are the way to rid me of those things that separate me from this power that's going to point me in the right direction and have me live my life the way God wants me to live my life. That's what the steps do. I've got all this stuff in the way of that happening. I have a power now that I didn't have before. I was powerless over food. My life was unmanageable. My life was unmanageable and I was powerless over my life. I couldn't get the people around me to do what I wanted and treat me the way I wanted them to and act like I think they should act. I was trying to control the world and I wasn't succeeding. I don't have to do that anymore. And when I can rely on this power that I have now, things turn out better for me. So going through the steps is a way for me to get rid of those things that block me from this this spirit, this power that is going to enable me to have the serenity that I have today. I have a lot of serenity in my life. And when things don't go right or I'm faced with difficulties, I don't have to figure out the answer and how to deal with it. I turn to this power within me, and sometimes I get quiet and I just look for an answer or wait for a solution. Other times I call and talk to some people, my sponsor or other people in the program who've maybe had the same experience and they can help me. So I'm thinking about having been in program 15 years this time, 2005. I've abstained from flour and sugar for 15 years. I could never do that on my own. The best I could do was 3 years. And that is a miracle, absolute miracle that I've been able to do that. And that's only with this power greater than myself. The whole time that I thought I had some power, I thought I could control my food. I thought I could do it. You would think after 50 years of doing that, that I would figure it out that I couldn't do it. Oh boy, I hope you guys can identify. Even today, if I think that there's a food I want to try that I probably could control if I just bought one serving at a time, and that is me getting insane again, thinking that I have some control or some power. So I guess I'm talking about this because after 15 years in program, I'm in a big book workshop right now, going through the big book a different way. And I want you guys to know that there are so many ways of going through the steps and so many different ways of going through the big book that the variety is fabulous. And the more you can avail yourself of all that's out there, especially with Zoom now, there's all kinds of meetings and workshops and programs. But, you know, I don't know it all. I'm still learning. I'm still growing. I'm still changing. But spending a lot of time looking at the powerlessness and how important it is to really get that I don't have any power. I don't have any power over my husband. I don't have any power over the people that are shutting down all the recreational activities here in town now. I don't have any power over any of that. I used to think that it was important to be able to control all that stuff around me. But, you know, higher power has a better plan for me than I can come up with for myself. And if I'm willing to just let go of my bullheadedness or my stubbornness, thinking I need to have things my way, whatever, I have to let go of that because I don't know what's best. So what else? I made some notes, but I'm not using them because I'm just all over the board here. If you're new, if you're struggling, if you've been around for a while, keep coming back because we have a solution. We all have our own individual issues, but our solution is the same. And what it is, the solution is finding a power outside yourself. And I'm going to read this thing on page 50 because I just think it's fabulous about that power. This is my little big book. This has the exact specific directions on how to recover, how to find a power outside yourself. It talks about here are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed. They flatly declare that since they have come to believe in a power greater than themselves, to take a certain attitude towards that power and to do certain simple things, there has been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of the total failure of their human resources, they found that a new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction flowed into them. This happened soon after they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. That's pretty powerful. This power will help me solve all my problems. I don't have to solve my problems. This power will help me solve all my problems, not just with the food, not with that. That's, you know, I've been relieved of the obsession for the food. And the first day I came back to OA, completely desperate, I had so much hope. There was hope the first day I walked in and said, I need help. Please help me. I can't do it anymore. And I got help and I got relieved. So I think I'm going to stop there. And thank you all for being here. I need you guys and keep coming back. The solution is here.
Thanks, Dorothy, Jana, and Sandy. Now we're going to have Claire, who's going to be our host, and she's going to lead the Q&A.
Got a lot of thank yous coming in, by the way, including thank you from me. That was just wonderful. So we have a question: if you thought of exploring other programs that dealt with food, and if not, why not?
When I was younger, I started with a weight loss program, very well-known one, and I had success in that. I lost weight while I was there, but as soon as I was away from it, you know, I went back because what happened, I was on a diet and it was always like, when can I get back to? So I would periodically go in and out of that particular weight loss group. And then I kind of got tired of doing that. And I would kind of go through the phone book, you know, phone books back then. And I just go through the phone book and look to see what was another one I had not tried. And I went through one, it was called, I think it was a program. And they didn't eat meat. So I thought that would work. I did that program. I mean, I would just look through everything. And finally, I got to the thing where I'm thinking, I've done these and I know they're not going to work. And the last thing I saw was Overeaters Anonymous, and I wasn't interested. so but finally, I my sister got me into OA, but I would look in the phone book to see if anything new showed up. But by the time I got to OA, I was convinced that this was the answer.
Thank you.
I never tried anything else because I could do it myself. I thought.
And I also used a very mainstream diet program twice and was very successful. But the minute I stopped with it, I started to gain the weight back. And I had just become, I really was demoralized. I couldn't imagine that anything was going to help me. I used to read, you know, women's magazines and read the diets. And, you know, I tried various things and was never successful. So, and I think that there are other 12-step programs involving weight that I didn't know about. And probably that's, for me, it has worked very well to be here.
Sandy, someone wanted to know what page you read from the big book.
I think it's page 50.
There's a question: at what point in your recovery did you realize that life was beyond your wildest dreams?
Sandy, I don't know that I had an aha beyond my wildest dreams moment, but I do know that about 6 months ago, I suddenly realized that I was totally relieved of any issues, the thing around food. It was like, oh yeah, things are just going on like normal. I just fixed my meals. Things are going. It was like, I didn't have any more of that angst or any more of the craziness around. And I hadn't for a while, but this was the first time I actually noticed it. It was like, oh, okay. Maybe I am okay here. Maybe I am actually recovering, still recovered, you know? It was interesting to me.
This is Jana. Like Sandy, I don't think I had an aha moment, but I really came to realize that when I had made amends to people, that I had freedom, that I wasn't carrying things around in my head, you know, and so therefore I wasn't feeling the urge to turn to food because I wasn't anxious about things. I wasn't resenting people. I often say, and I do believe that it's true, that without the program, I don't think my children would be particularly happy to visit me because I'd be telling them what to do. I'd be complaining. I'd be resenting things they'd done. I would not be a pleasant person to be around. And so it's just cleared away so many things that made my life miserable. I mean, part of being miserable was feeling like I was fat and that it was never, ever, ever going to get better. But then I had a lot of other things in addition that I was worked up about. and I have a much calmer life. Another thing that I didn't mention earlier, but I will mention now, is the importance of gratitude. It seemed so important to be able to learn to be grateful for things in all conditions. You know, I was just the other day wanting to feel sorry for myself about having been in this accident and some of the things that came from that. And then I thought, wait a minute, Jana, you are walking around. You were able to return to work. You retired. You know, I get to be retired. Hallelujah. And even now in the pandemic, I'm living a very good life. It doesn't look quite the way I wish it did, but there's so many things to be grateful for. And that takes me to a different place. And I, you know, so there wasn't a particular moment, and I'm going on and on, so I'll just stop here. But it really is a way of living that works.
I know for me, I don't think there, like, again, there wasn't a moment that I can say, oh yeah, it was just a building up. You know, this, it would happen in this area, in this area. And like, I didn't think this would ever happen. I didn't think whatever. Almost immediately coming into program, I was so isolated. I only had like one or two friends, and one of them wasn't even local. And I was just so cut off from people. And just coming into the rooms and having people remember my name and smile when I came in and hug me, and some people calling me. I mean, that to me, like, I never thought that would ever happen, that people would remember who I was. I was such a in the corner person, wallflower. And so just that kind of connection with people was the beginning of dreams that were to come more and more and more. And yeah, and they keep coming. And so that's the wonderful thing about it.
We have some sponsorship questions. The first of which is, when did you take on sponsees? How long did you wait to take on sponsees?
I think originally my sponsor told me I had to wait till after I had done my fifth step.
When I came in program back when, in my area, once you had, I think, 3 weeks of abstinence, you were allowed to, all people had to stand up and announce that they had 3 weeks, I mean, how much abstinence they had, as long as you had 3 weeks. And at that point, people could ask you to be their sponsor. But so I don't remember that there was anyone saying, this is when you can be a sponsor, but most people have sense enough not to take on someone with 3 weeks in the program. it was way different back then. You had to qualify, and I wasn't going to do it, but someone said, you have this much time and you stand up. And, you know, I didn't have that much to give anyone, so no one asked.
But we, one of the things that was going on when I came in was we get partners of recovery, and partner recovery was somebody who came in about the same time you did, and you guys would talk to each other every day. And I did that for like almost a year. And I'll tell you, there were many days I did not want to call my partner in recovery, but we did it. And it was helpful for her and it was helpful for me. And it was just another tool that worked, because it took me a while to actually get a sponsor to take me through the steps, but I had a partner in recovery, which was just great to have another person to be in contact with.
Can you all speak to how you take sponsees through the steps?
I don't have a way to take sponsees through the steps. It depends on the person. And so I don't have this is the way we're going to do it. Because I found that there were people who did it the way I said, and it didn't work for them. And I had to be more flexible. But basically what I will do is ask people to read this OA step book and to look at the workbook and start working through there. And I'm kind of liberal with that book. Like, don't try and answer everything, you know, whatever. I kind of work with people and see where they are. But presently, I usually refer them to the step workbook. But I'm open to if they have something else they want to try.
I also don't have a standard way. It really depends on the person. And I think I've done a variety of ways.
I use the big book. The big book just tells us exactly what to do very clearly and deeply. And I've gotten such great results myself that that's the only experience that I have.
Someone asked if you ever lied to your sponsor and how did you come clean?
To my knowledge, I haven't lied to my sponsor. And it seems very important for me to be truthful.
I can't remember lying to my sponsor. I can remember not telling my sponsor. I can remember my sponsor saying, what's wrong? And I not wanting to talk. My sponsor said, okay, we'll go home and eat. And I thought about that and I thought, oh, I better tell somebody. If I'm not telling my sponsors, I called someone else and told them. But they kind of told me that I needed, like, this is a relationship and I need to work at an honest, open relationship. And that part of my problem prior to program, I didn't know how to have healthy relationships. And a healthy and a sponsor-sponsee relationship is a chance for me to learn to what does a healthy relationship look like, and lying isn't one of them. Try and be as open and honest as I can.
Well, several questions about how do you maintain your emotional recovery, how do you maintain your abstinence, and also questions about since you've been in the program so long, if you're struggling with something, how do you feel about sharing that? Because you've been around so long. It's from someone else who's been around for a while as well. So I guess that's a three-parter. Why don't we start with how do you maintain your emotional recovery?
Well, for me, I need to talk about what's going on, and I need to trust that higher power will help me with it, with whatever's going on. I can't figure things out all by myself. I don't want to try and figure things out all by myself. And I've got a lot of great resources. I have like three sponsors. And I have, you know, fellows in the program that I can talk to. And if I've got something going on that's really racking with me, I know somebody has had the same experience and gotten through it. There's nothing that I can't find someone who knows how to get through something difficult. So we have the tools, and I have some faith that higher power is going to help me with whatever it is.
I have discovered that writing can be a really useful tool when I'm emotionally disturbed. Sometimes I'm disturbed and I'm not quite sure what's going on. And when I sit down with a piece of paper, I can just write it out. And there's a thing in the 12 and 12 where it talks about, we get to see how, you know, something that's happened to us has limits. Only this much has happened to us. It may seem like a whole lot to me, but there is a limit to it. And that has been a very helpful thing to think about. I recently realized that I had somebody in my family that I was really upset with, and that this had gone on for a long time. And I realized I need to do a fourth step on it. And I needed to work the program on it that way. And this was another one of these examples of my taking the action. I then had somebody outside the program give me a piece of information that was really useful to me in understanding my family member. And it didn't completely take care of it. And I'm still in the process of working through the fourth step. But it just made such a difference to me.
I found that it depends on the emotion, how deep it is, what's going on. So that, like has been mentioned, there are different resources that I have. I call it my toolbox. And that over the years, I know writing can be really effective for me. And I tend to do, when I journal, I always do a letter. It's always in the form of talking to God. So there's a dear God when I journal. And so I always feel like I'm talking to somebody. And that works. But then if I need to, then like a meditation or a reading or some tape, you know, whatever. And always, do I need to call someone? Do I need to talk it over? You know, so there's a variety of ways, but I know, and sometimes I just need to sit down and feel the feelings. You know, when I was grieving some deaths in the family, I was always trying to run and fix. And then finally I realized I set a timer for 10 minutes and sit there and cry. And that's what I need to do. Feeling the feelings is okay. But I can use other tools also to help me, but try not to avoid the feelings, but to work my way through them.
Dorothy, someone asked, can you give an example of something good that you had to let go of for something better?
This past year, we don't have enough time to talk about everything that I had to let go of this year, even before the pandemic started. And one of the things I'm going to say, I was a fitness center, loved it, did my yoga there, did my swimming there, did everything, had classes, and they were closing the center. And then all of a sudden, like, I was going to lose all these people that I had relationships with and everything else. It was going to be different. And I was pretty upset, but I found some great things to take its place. But that was, then COVID came and shut that down. And so, you know, there's been a lot of like, take a deep breath and let go. And I don't know I can't tell you everything that's happened over the year that isn't even COVID related that has been taken from my life. But I got to tell you, my sister said I'm one of the few people she knows who's thriving through COVID, because I've had to create some other things and things I'm enjoying.
People are looking for some tips on how you become abstinent. Struggling with becoming abstinent? How did you become abstinent?
My eating got so bad for me. I was desperate. I just couldn't go on living like that. And I don't know if you want to wait till it gets that bad, but if you get yourself to a meeting and get phone numbers and start using the tools, those things are there so that every day you can get, so they'll help you get through the day. It's like one of the things I did and still do is I am accountable to somebody for what I'm eating. So when I eat something, I know I'm going to have to tell somebody I ate this. And that, oh, I'm going to a meeting today. I want to be abstinent when I get to that meeting. There are all those things to support you to get through the day, and it will get easier. I know it took me probably a week to get the sugar out of my system so that the cravings went away. And once the cravings went away, it was easier. So a day at a time, no sugar, no flour, and a day at a time, then the cravings would lessen, and then I wasn't craving them so much. So there's a lot of support for you, and, you know, praying to a higher power for help, because I can't do it on my own, and a higher power helped me. So higher power will help you too. It's there for you.
For me, I think what happens is I know I'm in trouble, or like I'm going to be in a difficult situation. And sometimes I think a point where I finally realized that I really needed help, I just started surrendering. So I don't have the answer. I don't have a clue how this is going to work. But I know, I remember, because I have a belief in a higher power at the time, I just threw it up in the air. Threw it up in the air. So I don't know how this is going to work or anything else, but I'm throwing it up in the air. I don't have any answer. And if there's anyone or anything up there, it's yours. I don't know what to do, and I need help. And so even now I'll go, like, if I feel like I'm really urged to eat everything, I'll just go, help. I just go, help. And then, because that's for me a way of saying I don't have the answer. The other thing I'll do at times is say to my higher power, if you're going to have to do it. If you want me abstinent, you're going to have to do it. I don't have it in me. And I'm asking you to stand between me and the food. Whatever you have to do, please stand between me and the food. and I'll ask for the desire to be taken from me. So, I mean, there's, again, it's not all one way all the time, but again, just try the different things that I've learned over the years, and they work. If one doesn't work, go to the next one.
And one of the things that can be helpful in some situations is really working with a sponsor, or it could be a partner in recovery or somebody that you've called, to really be as honest with yourself as possible about what is the situation, what are the foods. There was a time when I had to ask my husband to get certain foods either out of the house or someplace where I would not be seeing them. And at that point, thank God, I didn't have an urge to go through the cupboards, but I couldn't have them on the counter in the kitchen where I would see them, because I couldn't handle that at all. There were times when I thought, okay, the kitchen is closed. I'm done with dinner. The dishes are done. I am not going back in that room until breakfast time. There were times, I was a night eater at times. There were times that I had the urge to get up in the middle of the night. And I thought, well, I can get up in the middle of the night and go to the bathroom. But other than that, even if I'm going to be wide awake all night long, I have to stay in this bed, because I am, if I get up, I am going to be at risk of eating. And, you know, there are times, and it's not always that way, we're kind of teasing out what is the thing that's causing the greatest problem, can be a useful thing. It's a way of being honest with myself and perhaps with somebody else, and getting that help by being honest can be something that can be useful.
That's a question. I guess I'll do it in two part here. The quote from the Big Book, half measures avail us nothing. What does that mean in recovery? And if you can speak to some of what your regular routine is in relation to that as well, like your daily routine, and what does that mean for you, that half measures availed us nothing?
Oh, I got one, because I'm in the middle of it right now. So I'm working on developing my relationship with a higher power. Okay, so half measures for me is what I've done for a long time. And that's like, I'll do a little morning reading, meditating, you know, and then at night I might think about higher power for a little bit, you know. But I heard this guy say, if you're working on a relationship with somebody and you met with them in the morning and said hi, and you saw them at night, what kind of relationship are you going to have with that person? And it's like, now I'm trying to, that's half measures for me. You know, now I'm trying to connect during the day, late, you know, think about higher power throughout my day. Maybe every 2 hours I have a little buzzer on my phone, you know, that I can think about higher power. And I try to think, okay, I'm going to a store. I'm taking higher power with me to the store today. I'm taking higher power with me to the tennis court. I'm going to, you know, have higher power in my life. And I want to go whole heart out on that rather than half measures, because I need higher power throughout the day, not just in the morning and not just at night. And half measures avail me nothing. So that's just something that I'm in the middle of working on now, to go whole hard on it.
For me, half measures, I'm not quite sure what that would mean for me, but I have a routine, and I also do readings in the morning. I do a meditation. To me, that is not a choice. I mean, I don't care what my schedule is. I always think, when will I get the meditation in? And at some point, I might not always get it in, but it's never on my mind that it should be skipped. So the prayer, because the meditation is where I connect with my higher power, and where I'm getting kind of like my walking orders for the day, and a way for me to think. I got to a lot of meetings, because for me, that's where, and stay connected with OA people. I cannot think that, oh, I just got a little dab and I'm going to do the rest of the week by myself or whatever. I need to have some kind of connection with program. And I need to be willing to, like someone mentioned, think about my food every day, you know, not just wing it. I mean, there's certain things that are just kind of built into my life right now that work. and I don't think about it that much, but it is there. It is there, always a part of my life in so many ways. And it doesn't even interfere. It's really given me more time to have more of a life. But the tools, the literature, the higher power, the steps, you know, I'm always, is somewhere in my mind. And at first it had to be kind of rote, but now I don't think it's as rote. You know, it's kind of like just where I naturally go to.
And for me, what came to my mind when I thought about half measures was doing things without thinking about them. So when I take the first three steps, I do it as questions to myself. You know, I say the step, and then I kind of ask myself, is that what I'm doing? Yes. You know, I'm just not automatically reciting them and thinking, oh yeah, I did that. So I'm trying to be engaged with the program in the things that I'm doing. And, you know, I'm grateful for these questions because it's giving me the opportunity to think of some new things that I could be doing or new ways in which I could use it. And that just seems so important. That's, for me, part of having been here this long is I don't want this to get old. I don't want this to get too, I mean, routine to one degree is great. Routine to another degree is boring. And that's not what my program is, not boring. I keep learning new things, and that is what one of the joys are.
I've had a couple of people ask if you are, just because you're around such a long time, are you comfortable sharing when you're struggling with your program or your food or something that's going on in your life? Are you comfortable sharing that?
I am so comfortable. Because when I was earlier in program and I was doing well, I wanted the crown of Miss OA, but people weren't giving it to me. And so I felt like when I felt that way, that I wanted to be Miss OA, I felt I couldn't talk to people about things because, you know, I had to maintain this image, you know, and then I realized, but I was struggling emotionally. And then started having more food thoughts. And I realized that if I didn't start talking about what's going on with me, I was going to lose everything. And that recovery is about being as honest and open with people as I can possibly be. And that there is nothing wrong. That's a strength when I can say, I'm struggling. I don't have an answer, or I'm hurting today, or whatever. It's so important to my program to be who I am and not to be pretending I have it all together, because I don't have it all together. And it's okay not to have it all together. And it doesn't mean I'm not working a good program. It just means I don't have it all together. It's okay.
Well, I love the term, it is our weakness, not our strength, that binds us together. And I mean, there have been times that I've sat in meetings and thought, do I really want to share this? You know, it's going to knock me off my long time, you know, Miss OA pedestal. And then I think, you know, if I don't share it, I'm not going to get the support and the help that I need. And I need that. You know, I still, one day at a time, I have to eat a certain amount of food every day. And food is always an issue for me. And if I'm cutting myself off from the source of support and strength, I'm going to go down the tubes real fast.
This is the one place I can share. I'm so grateful to have a place where I can share my ups and my downs. Thank you.
Someone asked them, how do you approach a newcomer at a meeting?
Oh, one of my favorite things. I welcome them and I ask them if they have any questions. I would recommend they get a 12-day sponsor because those are really great to take them through the pamphlet, to orient them. I suggest they start somewhere with a food plan, anywhere. Just get started. Just make a change now. Just start and talk to people and make sure they get some phone numbers.
Pretty much. I find it really important to go over and greet each newcomer. I think about what made me want to come back. And that was that people seemed interested in me and really cared about my recovery. And so I want to go over and let them know I care and give my phone number if they choose to have it. I'm not so good about it, to be honest, but I try to call newcomers and let them know I care and I hear them or heard them. And I do ask if they have questions and give them a little bit about program and, you know, a little direction if they want to.
And when I first came in, I went to a large meeting where it didn't seem like welcoming newcomers was all that important. So I felt that there were all sorts of people up on pedestals and I didn't connect with them at all. So I do try to welcome newcomers also. And I really try to be encouraging and welcoming and friendly and answer questions if they have any and share some of the things that have worked for me and, you know, that I've been doing this a while and that has really been useful and to be able to give hope.
Do you all have a plan of eating and do you share about it with other people or your sponsor?
I have a plan of eating. Do I share it? Not too much. My plan of eating has changed over the years as I have changed. And if somebody is interested, I'll share it with them. I've had people who I've had tried to eat like someone else. They do this. I tried it. It didn't work for me. And so I'm kind of careful about like, you should eat this way. I eat this way. You should. So, you know, I'm real careful about that. I do suggest people go to a nutritionist if they really have some questions or like whatever. But I do have a food plan. And so that lets me know when I'm off or I'm getting compulsive in some way. Without a food plan, I could just gradually add one, gradually add two, you know what I mean? So I have there's a plan in my head so that I know that I am not using food.
Thank you.
I have a food plan. I don't eat flour and sugar. I mostly eat three meals a day. I measure a few foods. It's evolved over the years and it's working for me.
I also have a food plan and I talked about it a certain amount. If people have questions, sometimes people want to know what my food plan is, then I share it with them. You know, I have no idea I don't have a feeling that my food plan is one that somebody else should have. There's such differences among us.
How do you keep your program fresh? What OA tools do you use to keep your program fresh?
I go to a lot of meetings. I'm going through a Big Book workshop right now. Over the last 15 years, I've been in a Big Book workshop 6 years. And those go through like 6 or 7 months. And I listen for special events and look for when I hear there's going to be a speaker meeting somewhere, I try and get to it. Just try and get as much as I can wherever I can. And Zoom is so fabulous. I go to some meetings in London now, which are really cool. Of course, just more compulsive overeaters. So I'm actually ramping up, not slowing down on what I can get for my recovery. Thank you.
This is one thing I like about COVID, that I can get to meetings all over the place. And somebody was at a meeting I attended and they said they were trying to get to a meeting in every state. So that's been my goal, to get to a meeting in every state. And I want to be able to say some of them I've done in person before COVID, but that's my goal, to say I've been to a meeting in every state. And then I was talking to someone for this convention who lives in Canada. I thought, maybe I'll try all the provinces in Canada too. You know, so I'm trying to, it was fun because I'm meeting new people. And I think that's what keeps it fresh, meeting new people and hearing, the new people. And even though I'm hearing pretty much the same thing, it's kind of affirming to me. And I don't know what keeps her. I think it's just what happens in my life keeps her fresh, the new things that I have to deal with. And then, and just applying it to it, program to it, makes me, keeps me fresh.
I just want to add, taking people through the steps is another way to really amp up your program.
The question of recovered versus recovering compulsive overeater.
Oh, I said I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I'm recovered from having no power because I have this power now outside myself. And recovered from a hopeless state of body and mind. I am recovered and I'm grateful for it. And I'm still a compulsive overeater. That's not going to change. I'm still one bite away, but I've found some, I've got this power now and I'm working on keeping it, making it stronger. Thank you.
Everyone, you got a lot of thank yous for all the honest and open sharing and appreciation for today and hellos, your inspiration.
Thank you, Claire. Thank you, Sandy and Jana and Dorothy, as we say up here in the Northwest Territories. Masi cho, that means thank you very much. So here are two noteworthy recovery resources available in Region 1. Virtual sponsors is one thing. Region 1 offers a matchup service for virtual sponsoring. Find out more on your website, oaregion1.org. Also, Region 1 maintains a speaker list. Now that there is no travel barrier, how about bringing your experience, strength, and hope to a new meeting in Region 1? You can add your name if you are willing to speak, or you can request a copy of the speaker list. Check out how on Region 1 website, again, oaregion1.org. We'd like to thank all the speakers and everyone who attended this workshop. We'll now close the meeting with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.